Hello, friends. It's Jenkins here from Dota Alchemy, and I have a special guest today, my good old friend Nusham Dota. Say hello. We're bringing you episode 2 of Alchemy Answers. Okay, somebody says, that's the best micro guide I've seen so far. Wow, it sounds like I just selected a question and a compliment at the start of it on purpose, but I didn't. But I have a question. What heroes do you suggest to start practicing micro with? My suggestion for that would be to practice with heroes where the units all kind of do the same thing. For instance, like Nature's Prophet and Broodmother, those heroes are a lot easier to micro because all of the, or even Naga Siren, because all of the illusions, all of the units are the same thing. So all you really need to know how to do is microing is how to micro the hero and how to micro the units. And then if you do the kind of the select, the deselecting with the shift, it's really easy to micro super effectively. Like basically that will allow you to take it kind of a step at a time where you can do that, become good with those micro heroes, which is going to help you with the harder micro heroes, and then you could start moving into like the Beastmasters, the Meepos, the heroes that you might actually want the other micro skills to play those.
The way that I was taught and the way that I know most high level players think about micro, because it's just like a very common theme, is like they basically will categorize like a certain type of like summon or whatever you're looking at, like say for a control group, like three will be your control or five will be your damage or one will be everything and two will be everything minus one thing. So for example, in like Warcraft 3, which is obviously where like Dota comes from, like the most common way to play was one would be your army and two would be your army minus your hero. But I know there's still a lot of people who do this anyway. For example, like Meepo, I know like No-Tail, I'm pretty sure his buttons are what I use, and it's one would be all your Meepos, two would be all your Meepos minus your main one. So like for example, if you're going to poof on someone, you'd press two and then do your poof combo and then blink in on your main guy. And then after that you just do one control group for each individual thing. So like three, four, five, six will just be one, two, three, four. Or sorry, one would be F1, and then two, three, four, five would be three, four, five, six. It's a little confusing because they're off by one, but
With
I think the easiest thing to share with people that will help them learn micro heroes, if say someone's trying to learn Chen or Enchantress particularly, is one of the easiest ways to micro those heroes is you have a button, whether it's, for example, I do control group one and they'll control everything. Just having a button that controls everything. So for example, if anything, I waste the keybind, so it's better to just have select all units and bound and like get used to using that. And then having one that's just all your summons minus your hero is really important as well, in my opinion. So you can micro hero around. So like for example, say you want to just dive a tower, right? If anything, a lot of people kind of look at creeps as like a big meat shield. You can kind of just like click them into the tower and not worry about it. But you don't really want to be doing that with your own hero, right? Because like obviously you run the risk of just killing yourself, which is way more valuable than your creeps probably. And then yeah. So what I meant by like the categorizing your creeps, like for example on Chen or Enchantress, like three and four will always be my setup. Like usually you want to do it in like a numerical order of how you want to be pressing your buttons. So for example, if say I wanted to troll net someone into a Centaur Stomp, right? You would do what's first. So again, you want to troll net them first. So that would be three. And then four would be your Centaur. So you're going to follow that up. And then after that, five and six is usually your useless creep, so that they're at least bound. But some people don't even waste keybinds on that. You don't have to. Technically, you can just use, control
Damn,
all.
dude,
Because for
that's a
example,
dank
five and
setup. I didn't know
six.
you did that. That's pretty intense. That's actually something I'm gonna start doing
So
in the order.
you just set it up in an order, yes. So three,
Yeah,
four,
that's
five. So
smart.
for example, it's like you net them into a Centaur Stomp into another Centaur Stomp, or like for example, an Ursa Clap. Typically, you like because of how the creeps work and like prioritization with like how you want your creeps to be used. Typically, five and six are going to be useless or farming creeps. So for example, five and six are usually going to be like Alpha Wolves, Ogres, Harpy creeps. I don't know, Ancients with just auras or like Satyrs. Satyrs is most common I have on six or five. Or Wildkins. So for example, if I have like three centaurs, right? Instead of doing four, five, six for each centaur, they'll just do four would equal all centaurs. So you can just do, four, Q, tab, Q, tab, Q, and like chain it that way. But sometimes the risk you run with doing that and why I stopped doing that is because say you have all your centaurs in one control group. When you go to follow up your stun, what if you press four and you stun, but the centaur you picked
Isn't the
happened to be
right
the one
one?
in the back? Yes,
Yeah.
exactly. That's like the
That makes
big risk you
sense.
run.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But for shit like Wildkins, it's fine to do because you're not gonna miss it, right? So
That
like you
missed
press
the
like,
tornado.
so for example, you like press five and then you just Q tab, Q tab, Q tab, and then once you spawn all the tornadoes, you box all the tornadoes up. You can actually double click the tornadoes and it'll select all of them. Same with any creep, by the way. If you double click any creep, it'll select all units that are the same. So like if you double click a centaur, you'll get all your centaurs. So anyways, if you double click your Wildkin Tornadoes or you box them, you can put that on six so that you can move them around, you know what I mean? So you can press six, right click it on someone. Press six, move them around.
Micro's pretty intense, honestly.
It is
Just
very intense, yeah.
it just depends on the hero. I even like with Lycan, it's even something I had to get really good with, or else you're just not. It's a good hero. It's not like it's not worth picking it, but there's certain patches where if you can't micro something well, it's not worth picking it. Like you need to be able to you can't just be lazy and not have a bind for the Necro unit on Lycan. Like it purges. Like you have to have a bind for that.
Yeah.
Period. A friend and I have had a lot of success in the low legend bracket in running an aggressive dual offlane like Skyaxe. We will always be winning our lane and either making them abandon it, giving us towers, or throw heroes at the lane, giving us space. We are not sure how to go from there as we rely on our team to use the advantage we are giving them. How can we help the team to take advantage of our lead, either through playstyle, items, or picks? And
I have a
are
perfect
we
answer for
in
that.
pubs putting too much into these pro lanes that rely on well-rounded teams and cooperative teammates? That's a good question. You can
I
go
have
first.
like a very good answer for that. Basically, I think a lot of that comes down to taking your lane advantage and having a game impact elsewhere. Like you can't just win one lane. That's not how Dota works. Like sure, it feels good to get them to go out of the lane, but once they leave, you need to realize why you were there in the first place. So for example, if you were there to pressure, say, I don't know, Bloodseeker, right? If Bloodseeker leaves, then why are you even there anymore, right? Because again, you're only out there to pressure Bloodseeker. It's kind of a harder concept to understand because most people don't really know why they're running the lane to begin with. But more or less, you need to transfer your advantage elsewhere. It's not good enough just to make space if, because your team's not normally going to make use of the space. And the easiest way to do that, in my opinion, is to rotate the support out. That's like the most common thing you'll see is like once you win the lane, to like 2v2 or 2v1 or whatever, if you're running a dual lane particularly, since that's what the question said. Typically that core hero, once he gains an advantage, he doesn't need the help anymore. So you can kind of like use your advantage to go elsewhere. And if you're winning the lane as hard as you say, typically the four role or whoever the support is up there will be so big that like he'll basically be as strong, if not stronger, than whoever he rotates to. So for
You
example,
can just go win another lane and then you're still
yeah, so
winning
if, for example,
bot
if like you're level three Sky
or
because you
whatever your
just
lane
destroyed
is.
top, chances are, and you go to the other lanes, they're not going to be that high level anyway, because you were winning so hard anyway. So when you go to the other lanes, you should feel like you have a huge impact. It's almost like fighting like a noob or something. You know, like you choke, and like this guy has like no farm or levels. You're going to feel really strong. And basically, it's just yeah, the main emphasis is to just transfer your advantage elsewhere because putting too much focus in one area of the map is typically not the way to play.
Yeah, I think it's just it's a matter of getting a pretty good a gauge on it just by playing a lot. It's not something that's like super easy. A lot of the time you'll overstay your welcome in a lane as a four role when you actually should have went somewhere else. But it's okay because a lot of the time you're so huge that it doesn't really matter. Like for instance, I've played a lot of Pudge lately where I'll go into the off lane and there hits a point where I know I should leave, and sometimes I'll stay past that point, lose a bunch of HP, and then it's like, oh okay. I should just leave my offlaner here to CS because there's no more like kill potential, you know what I mean? It's like even if there is, who gives a damn? I would be better off like I can roam now. There's a lot of reasons that I can leave, and it's not always like super obvious. So for the particular example that you're talking about with Skyaxe, Sky would obviously be the hero that rotates. But something I do want to say also, when you're playing the Axe in that lane, there's a certain timing where you would also want to rotate as well. So usually with
Yeah.
Axe, you'll pick up a Vanguard and you can occupy the enemy's kind of safe lane jungle area, which is going to result in them obviously getting a lot less farm, and then push the creep wave out, occupy the jungle. You can also take Ancients, which is really good. And what you want to do is you want to try to accelerate your farm using that space that you have until you get the blink, and then that's when you rotate and you kill whoever the most important hero that needs to die on the enemy team is. You want to rotate there with the blink dagger and kill. So like Nushan was saying, you want to transition your advantage to the other lanes. Use the fact that you can get that accelerated farm in that lane. Obviously, if you're Axe and you're dominating, usually you'll go for a Vanguard first, which means you don't really want to just run at another lane with a Vanguard unless there's a really good reason for it. Like if you have like a Pugna mid or something and all you need to do is go tank the tower, then yeah, you can transition your advantage that way. But a lot of the time where you can transition your advantage as the offlaner is that you actually need to get that blink dagger timing or some other item where you can't just run at people. And really the best thing to do was just to do exactly what you're doing at the start, which is apply pressure on that lane, but do it on your own so your support can leave. and then just try to get as much farm as you can until you can transition out of that lane. And then slowly but surely, you'll gain this advantage. And even if your team is a bunch of idiots, they will know how to use that advantage. As long as you're running around and taking towers, everybody in Dota knows how to hit neutral creeps. In fact, that's probably one of the biggest banes of a lot of these lower ranked players, is that they'll just hit neutral creeps. Everybody knows how to do that.
Exactly. So it doesn't free up a lot of space on the map. So basically, like, it's the same as pressuring. Like, if you pressure them out of the lane, it's like I said at the beginning, if you don't understand where you're going, like, you basically are doing your job, and then once they leave, you're not doing your job. It's like, yeah, it's really that easy to summarize. It's like,
pretty simple.
Say they leave the safe lane, go to the off lane. Sometimes your job might be to just go and camp mid instead. So it's really important to understand, again, once one thing happens, right? Like, there's basically like an order of steps, and once the first part is done with, you need to kind of recognize what the second part is.
So, hey, I got one major question. When you're playing offlane, I think it's better if we don't creep block, because the opponents will creep block, and if they are even average in blocking, then our creeps will meet in the opponent's safe lane tower. As an offlaner, that's what we want, right? If I'm wrong, tell me where I made the mistake. I've tried that, believe me, I've tried that, but usually what happens is the carry is just blocking the creeps. He notices that his creep wave, or your creep wave, is going to go into his tower, so he just runs up and grabs the wave, because that's just how the timing works. So I would say that you probably don't want that, because then it's going to be right outside his tower, which is kind of the perfect position for the carry, since then you can't really kill the carry or apply a lot of pressure unless you have something like a Skywrath. Like, you'd rather have a little bit of space between the wave and the tower, so that way you can be a huge bullet, your Windranger, something like that, Doom with the Infernal Blade. Like, there's a lot of reasons you would want to walk up and hit a carry, but if they're like some ranged hero, they're just sitting under the tower last inning, but the tower's not hitting the creep wave, that's worse.
Lot of safe laners who would want, they would rather farm under the tower than to be away from, like, it's basically safer for them and better for them overall to be there anyway. So
I think
it's
so
not
too.
You kind of give them what they want in a sense. Because, like, they're not expected to win the lane. They're just kind of getting creeps.
Although,
they're not necessarily trying to win, like, level one. But if it's, like, a dual lane where you're expected to fight each other, then yes, I think that's good.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, I do think, though, that pushing the very first wave is very, very good. Doing what you said in the question is not going to consistently put your wave in their tower, but hitting the creep wave will. Like, if you can pressure a lane so much that you can just keep hitting the creeps without taking a lot of harass, and you can tank the creep wave without taking a lot of harass, then you're going to push your wave into their tower, which is going to give you level 2 before they get it. And a lot of the time, if you get level 2 before they get it, especially with something like a Sky Axe, it's almost, they can't recover from that. Like, it's really, really easy to pressure two level 1s if you have two level 2s. So I would say that, like, to kind of follow up on the question, not really an answer to the question, but it is good in the current patch if you're running dual off lanes to try to just whack the creeps. Honestly, even with both heroes, like, kill the range creep. Like, you want the wave to push
also
into them.
An easy way to basically, like, summarize what you're saying, too, that also helps with, like, the new patch. Basically, the neutrals don't spawn until a minute. And typically, when you push, you want to do that so you can pull the side. Obviously, people might block it with wards or whatever, but if they don't in general, I feel like Jengen said pretty much pushing is
push
usually better.
Push and then pull.
Yeah, so basically with that change in the patch where they don't spawn for a minute, I feel like doing it specifically, like, just because you asked very particularly on the first wave, I don't think it's as good as, say, it could have been. But obviously the creeps didn't work like that before, so.
I've been seeing these kind of videos for some time, and this is on a top 5 heroes of the patch video. I've been seeing these kinds of videos for some time, but now I'm curious, would it be worth practicing these meta heroes even if I haven't played them before? I mean, there are also other guides that say that you should only have at most 20 heroes in your playlist, but what if these meta heroes aren't there? Would it still be worth practicing them? I think that it depends. I mean, patches, with the bi-weekly patches, they don't last very long, so you can get kind of screwed if there's none of your heroes in the meta, but there are definitely easy ones. There are definitely easy ones to learn. I would say focus on, like, one to two heroes. Like, for instance, I wasn't a great Windranger prior to this patch, and I watched a bunch of replays, and I learned fairly quickly, but could I play everything as a 4-roll this patch? That probably not, you know, but as long as you're picking a few, and you're just having realistic expectations about how quickly you can practice something, and you're watching replays, and you're seeing what people do, and not kind of having that ego where it's like, oh, I'm just going to go pub with it, you know, like, because the thing is, when you learn one of these heroes, with pubbing, so you take 100 pubs to learn, where you could just watch a replay and see exactly how it's played at a high level, and you can just replicate that. Even if you don't necessarily understand it, like you can do movements, and then you go into a pub, and then you understand, oh, this is why this happened. So I would say, yeah, just be realistic about your expectations. You can learn a few of the heroes, but I wouldn't necessarily try to go too ham. Like, I wouldn't do a bunch of heroes at once. I would kind of stick to like 1 to 3 heroes if you're looking to pub and also win MMR. Learn them and also win MMR. I don't know, what do you think?
I think basically metas come and go. Learning a hero is never going to be a bad thing. But if, say, you're trying to play competitive or something and there's a rush, then maybe I can see it. But yeah, I think the biggest thing that I would take away from that is I think you've actually talked about this before when you started playing competitive. Basically, the more heroes you add to your hero pool, like every meta, even if, say, Lycan's not meta next 2 patches, if you learn him on this patch, the next time he comes meta, well, there you go, you have Lycan in your repertoire. So I think it's really good to learn heroes that are meta at the time.
Yeah. I think it is too. I just always try to remind myself to be realistic about like what I can actually play at a high level, because like for instance, something like Windranger, Lashrak, BS, we were screaming with BSJ the other day, and I played with him and I played Lashrak, so he's seen me go like 20-1 with Lashrak or something. But that's in a pub, right? So it's that's different. And when he asks like competitively, can I play it? I think back to all of the games where we're playing against like really, really high level players, and would that be different? Like, would I know what to do? And my answer was kind of no. Like, I haven't, despite having really good, a couple of really good games on it, I would say no, I can't play that at a high level. And that's just because I think that Lashrak is one of those heroes where I wasn't 100% confident on that hero coming into this patch, but he became really, really good. And there's just other heroes within this patch that I have focused a lot more time and practice and replay analysis and stuff, learning. So I'm actually good with those ones, but like not everything in the patch. But once the meta changes and these heroes that I did learn become, like Nushan was saying, become more powerful again, like when Windranger becomes powerful again, I'll still be good at it. You don't forget how to ride a bicycle 10 years later. You know what I mean? These heroes are pretty similar the way that they're played. But then I'll have an opportunity then to learn Lashrak to the point where I can play it at an extremely high level. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's easy to summarize. You have a hero puddle, add a few more heroes every patch, eventually the puddle grows. If you're trying to learn new heroes or your focus is just, say, you're newer to the game, I think picking a role and just focusing on one role is the most important advice I could give. Because if you're trying to learn every single role, every single meta hero, that's just not going to work out well.
Random shit. Oh, this is a good question for you. Nusham, opinion on Invoker in the current meta?
I think he's too susceptible to being ran out early, and his laning's just way too weak, and this is a laning meta. But I think if you have the right group fight, and he has the ability to get the space needed to like get up his core items, he's really good. Like, I think he's one of those heroes that hypothetically he's really good. He has a lot of damage output. You know, he's great in group fights. He can split push. He can do a lot of stuff, right? But the problem is all these heroes like Lycan and shit are really popular right now. They'll just run you down before you can do anything.
He's too slow, is what you're saying. He's too slow paced.
Basically, he has too much build up. Yeah, because
That makes
even like
sense.
there were games he got ran over in the major. I think he got picked like 2 or 3 times, but the one game where he did get farm, he still lost just because it's just not enough.
I
Like,
think
outside of competitive though, I think he's great in pubs. I think he's a fun hero and all, but I think in this patch, if you're looking at things like objectively in terms of like say competitive, I think it's just too hard to make work. It's not
I
worth
think
it.
there's
Yeah.
quite a few heroes like that actually right now where they've been buffed significantly. And maybe even their pub win rate's pretty high, but you just never see them in competitive. I think Spectre's a weird case because she's kind of getting picked a little bit more because she's been buffed to the point. But for a long time, Spectre has had this 60% ridiculous win rate and never picked. And I think it's for that reason, because it's just the hero has been a little bit too slow and not good enough to justify that. But I think that the hero is good enough now. Like, you pick up a Vanguard and this hero, the talents are just ridiculous. Like, you feel immortal with the talent build that everybody's going now. But I think the hero's good enough to justify, but I think there's a lot of heroes where it's like, okay, why isn't this hero getting picked? Like, Invoker, 0 mana cost Invoke? What the hell? Invoker players have been complaining about Invoke having that mana cost for so long, like saying, like, oh, he'll be broken when that gets changed. It's not broken. But that's because the meta just doesn't work for him. That's all. Thanks for watching, guys. I'll catch you guys on the flip side.
Later, guys.